Here's another podcast interview from the WJCW Morning Team, Thinking Out Loud.
We welcome to the program Brandon Blevins of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. Brandon is the wind program coordinator speaking to us this morning from Knoxville. Good morning, Brandon.
Good morning. How are you all doing this morning?
Doing great. Now, the weather is very blustery up here in northeast Tennessee. What's it like around Knoxville this morning?
It's just raining. It looks like a couple storms came through overnight.
Yeah, we had some major storms overnight here and plenty of wind, too. As a matter of fact, if we'd had one of your anemometers here at the studio at WJCW in Gray, probably would have been blown off the mast there. But you are wind program coordinator for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. If you will, quickly, just tell our listeners what you do and about the program you work with.
Okay, so I work with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, who is a regional nonprofit. In fact, the only regional nonprofit who's been out in the field over 20 years working with utilities and states to advance clean energy options. And in the wind program, we operate a couple of different grants. One is in the state of Tennessee. We'll work with landowners and communities to look at feasibility studies or bring information. And we also work in the state of Georgia and then regionally as well to work with key stakeholders in talking about wind energy. How can it be integrated responsibly into our electric system?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that because, you know, many times we think we have the romanticized picture of out west, you know, and there was the ranch house and there was the windmill beside it and it harnessed, you know, to bring up the water and everything, and that was about the extent of it. What we're talking about obviously here is something where you're talking about private landowners but on a much larger power generation scale.
Yeah, that's right. The wind turbines that you see today, you may have seen them on TV and in advertisements, but they can range from something that can power your house all the way up to something that can power a couple hundred homes. And those turbines are much larger. They're certainly not used to pump water.
That goes without question. Now, you mentioned making the power for your house there. Let's talk a little bit, if you will, first of all, about the home side, and then we'll move into more of the municipal and logging into the grid and this sort of thing. Is it economically feasible at this point for a homeowner to be able to generate their own electricity?
They would need to have a good wind resource, and so for that in Tennessee, that's going to mean being up on a high elevation ridge, probably 2,000 feet or higher, and with no trees around. TVA will buy your power back at a little higher than what you pay for it, but it's not quite as there, not as much as the larger scale wind turbine.
Say an individual like this, you're talking about, say they have the right altitude, the right wind, and so forth. What sort of a dollar investment would they need to be looking at in order to begin to initiate it at their home?
They're going to be looking anywhere between $15,000 and $25,000 to start, so you need to have the financing set up to start.
Okay. Does your group, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, does it work with homeowners to help them get financing? Is that a service you offer?
We will. We have access to what's known as a wind power map. You can use that to qualify for various financial pieces. If you're a farmer particularly, the USDA has grants that are available. In fact, the deadline is July 31st, 2009, but it's the Renewable Energy for America program, REAP. You can contact your local USDA representative, and they can help you understand the process for filing for some of that assistance.
Brandon, let's talk specifically what you're doing in the Johnson City area up on Buffalo Mountain.
Okay, so we're on top of Buffalo Mountain on one of the cell towers that's owned by the city, and what we're doing is testing the feasibility for a wind turbine, and what we're trying to understand is how often the wind blows at a strong enough speed to generate power up there. We have testing equipment at different heights that's measuring speed and direction, and it's going to record it in 10-minute averages for the course of a year, and then we'll be able to share that data with the city so they can make a decision moving forward from there.
Now, let's say the data turns out good, and Buffalo Mountain would be a good choice for a wind turbine. What then?
That's up to the city. If the city wanted to move forward, we'd be more than happy to help them talk about some different options.
What are some of the options? Some of the things that could be done to harness this wind energy?
So if it was good and the city did want to move forward, there's various options as far as the financial arrangements of how it might be built. The city could simply lease the land. to a third-party developer, which is what it's done out west, and it's why it's so popular, is because farmers will give up just a little piece of their land to allow a developer to come up there and install the equipment and then sell the power back to the grid. Another piece that's becoming popular in places like Minnesota, this is popular, and then also in the Northeast, the landowner, in this case the city, can actually invest some into the project and see some of the revenues from the project. To move forward there, though, there's going to be various obstacles, I guess, to get over. I wouldn't call them obstacles, but due diligence needs to be done. Environmental studies need to happen, geotechnical studies need to happen, and most importantly, community acceptance needs to happen.
We were talking about this early this morning, Brandon. We had a call from a listener. His name was John. I don't remember his last name, but he's had some experience with wind energy, and he was commenting that sometimes it's more difficult on a mountain because of wind shears as opposed to having windmills out in an open area where the wind basically blows consistently from one direction. Can you comment on that?
I absolutely can. That's why we're measuring at different heights, because the wind shear and turbulence in the mountains can be a little higher, and you want to understand what that is for two reasons. One is so you're not having a wind regime that is over too turbulent and increasing your operation and maintenance costs. And the other is so that you can understand what direction the winds are going to come from, so that if you were going to site a wind farm, how you would properly site that so that you're not getting the interference from maybe more turbulent wind mm-hmm. coming across.
You following up on this, Brandon, the fact of being able to withstand high winds and even shear capacity, obviously it depends on where the wind turbine would be located. But generally speaking, what is the upper limit of capacity to be able to sustain high winds on a typical wind turbine?
A typical wind turbine will what they call feather its blades, and that means instead of having them facing the wind open so that it's creating it's turning quite a bit, mm-hmm. it'll turn so that it'll almost, they call it pinwheeling, and that's at 55 miles per hour. After that, they'll switch a braking system that will stop the turbine, and it's not brakes like on a car, but it's more of a magnet. That when it kicks, it breaks a circuit and the blades will not move. Hmm. And that's when the winds get over 55 miles per hour.
You mentioned community input, and obviously this is very important. I know one thing in the past, it's not something I have a problem with, other people may, is the visibility of the wind turbine itself. That's probably part of one of the biggest community things, is it not?
Absolutely, it is. Folks always fear the unknown. They've not seen a wind turbine, and when you talk about how large they are, you know, these things are up to 300 feet, that you can't hide them, and mm-hmm. you don't want to hide them
yeah.
because the higher winds are up higher. When you start going through and talking about the pros and the cons of wind, you can address the visual concerns. If folks want to see a wind turbine, they can always drive to Oak Ridge and through Oak Ridge to Oliver Springs. There's 18 wind turbines sitting on top of a hill from there. So you can see them as you come in and see what the visual pollution is. I personally, if they're responsibly sited, no environmental concerns, no geotechnical concerns, to me, when I look at them, they're not as obstructive as maybe I thought before I mm-hmm. saw one up close.
I understand they also have a very pleasant hum.
It's a whooshing sound.
Whoosh.
And again, that's one of those things where it's just best to go visit a wind farm. And sit underneath one, and we could have a conversation just like we are, and there'd be a whoosh coming through, and it's every time the blade comes by. Blades are about 18 RPMs at full speed.
I remember a few years ago, Brandon, over in Boone, North Carolina, near Boone, there was a wind turbine, and there were some complaints from residents about the noise. Is that a common thing?
In that era, it was. That was a NASA turbine, and it was a test turbine. It's much like if you drive out to Palm Springs, you see all the various size and array of turbines, and you're like, my gosh, they're everywhere. That was part of the testing phase that went on in the 80s, and then California continued it in the early 90s. Today, the turbines are different. The blades are three-blade machines, not two like the one on Howard's Knob in Boone. and the blades are also made out of composite materials for some of the heavier metals that, may have been on the Howard's Knob turbine.
One other thing I'd like for you to comment on, Brandon. We had a story a few days ago from the AP, the Associated Press, from their science writer Seth Borenstein, and I'll read the first paragraph of the story and get your comment. It says, the wind, a favorite power source of the green energy movement, seems to be dying down across the United States, and the cause, ironically, may be global warming, the very problem wind power seeks to address. Hmm. Your comments on that, Brandon?
Well, weather and climate are different things, so I'll throw that out there. But it is important to note that the winds in the summertime, in this area particularly, they tend to be lower in the summer and higher in the winter. And I'll also point out that wind changes, as we all know, minute to minute, and it'll change seasonally. But year to year, it stays roughly the same, but it could be, you know, plus or minus 2 or 3%. And that's why you look at long-term trends. What's it? How's the wind been the last 30 years? And I can look right at Tri-Cities Airport there and grab their weather data for correlation. So maybe it is down this year, but that's a weather phenomenon versus maybe a climate phenomenon.
Sounds like kind of like my wife's moods. changes from day
careful,
to day.
Careful there, Dave.
Hey, Brandon, this has been fun. We really, really appreciate you checking in with us. Anything else that you would like to address before we conclude the conversation?
Tell us about your website.
Yeah, I was going to certainly say there's two different websites I would encourage folks to go to follow the progression of what we're doing. That the first one is www.cleanenergy.org. And then if you want to know more about our particular program in Tennessee, you can always go to www.tennesseewind.org. We have free workshops that we sometimes host. We're going to be in Crossville, Tennessee, July 22nd, and we're looking to come into the East Tennessee area, maybe Elizabethan, later on in August. And so certainly look for that for a free workshop on wind energy.
Well, with all the hot air that we have here at WJCW on the morning show, we ought to be made poster boys for Tennessee wind, but that's another topic.
Hey, Brandon, again, thank you so very much, and let's stay in touch.
Please.
All right, thanks, Dave and Carl.
Bookmark this page and return for more Thinking Out Loud podcast interviews by the morning team at AM 910 WJCW.